Chapter 19. The engine wakes.
Where's Strykal?
Asked Koplika, his intimidating violet stare fixed on Davinch and Blake.
She's hunting for him, said Blake.
And Jaff's prisoner might be loose too?
Asked Koplika.
That's possible, said Davinch.
Didn't you check the cellar?
Davinch hesitated.
I was going to, he replied. I was on my way down. Then I heard you call my name, so...
I didn't call your name, you idiot,
snapped Koplika.
I've been up here all the time. You wouldn't have heard me.
But, Davinch began.
He was playing with you, sneered Koplika. Psychana tricks, you idiot. He's trying to game us.
He turned slowly, surveying the expanse of the loom visible from the main gantry. In the cage behind him, Sark shivered and whimpered.
He's a monster,
mumbled Blake.
You should have seen it, Koplika, what he did to Jaff.
She deserved anything she got, replied Koplika. She let them get in here. She let them walk right in.
Wasn't that the point? Asked Davinch. To bring them here? To silence them?
Not inside the hall, you idiot, said Koplika.
Well, maybe not that, replied Davinch,
but it makes it easier. They're trapped. They're confused. This place messes with your head, especially when you're not used to it. Da Vinci, if I'd wanted to bring them inside to kill them, said Koplika, I'd have called in reinforcements, proactive specialists, a kill team from the Skolem on Gudrum, maybe negotiate some cooperation from the traitor hosts, or even petition the king to lend us a grail. This is a mess. There's no time for any of that now. An outside assist would take days or weeks to arrive.
Yeah, but...
Da Vinci began.
Weeks, Da Vinci,
said Koplika firmly.
We don't have weeks.
But we've killed four of them,
said Blake,
and two more caged up. Maybe three, if Jaff got that Magos shut away before she died. That just leaves the old bastard himself.
The others don't matter, you asshole, said Koplika. They're just foot soldiers, ten a penny. The old bastard is the old bastard for a reason. We've got an alpha-class psyker with a grudge loose in here. Either of you combat psykers? Didn't frigging think so. I've got to blank him. I've got to use Sark.
He turned and looked at the cage.
I've got to use you now, haven't I, Magos?
He called.
Magos! Magos!
The naked wretch in the cage gurgled back.
Blake, get the kit, said Koplika.
Wait, Koran, said Davinch, stepping forwards. That's not a good idea. Chase will have your guts. The instructions were clear. Sark is a creative asset. We use what strength he has to manufacture. He's not a proactive weapon, and we don't waste his power using him that way.
The friggin' rules were changed when Jaff ballsed it up, Davinch, said Koplika. Chase might not like it. The king might not like it, but they'll see it was necessary.
But if you damage him...
We'll keep him sound, said Koplika.
Koplika, Sark's burning out, said Davinch. He's still exhausted from the last weaving. He needs time to recover. And if you start him up and use his power, we don't know how many more constructs we'll get out of him. We may not meet our quota. Or at the very least, we could fall months behind.
Koplika walked across the platform until he was nose to nose with the tall, tattooed man. Davinch pulled back a little.
Yes, said Koplika. Chase will be furious. Imagine how much more furious she'll be if we allow Eisenhorn to shut this place down. She'd bring us back from the dead just to kill us all over again. Protecting this place is our first responsibility. The Cognite cannot lose the loom. It's not an option. He must be found and finished before he can do any damage to it. So, we've got to use Sark.
Davinch nodded reluctantly.
Besides, Koplika added, the other one's out there. What's her name?
Betancourt,
said Blake.
Right. She needs to be wiped too. We can't risk any word of this getting off-world. So, Sark can handle that as well. Blake, get the kit.
The portly man nodded and hurried off the gantry to a lower platform. Goblika put his assault weapon down on the deck and went over to the cage. He crouched down.
Magos,
he called softly.
Draven, you stay calm now. You hear me?
The man in the cage moaned and curled up in a tight ball. Goblika put his hand on the frame of the cage door and said a single word that made Da Vinci cringe. The cage door swung open. Sark whined and curled up even tighter. Blake returned, carrying a Medicaid pack. He opened the case, prepped an injector, and handed it to Goblika.
Full dose? Asked Goblika.
Blake nodded. Goblika crawled into the cage. Sark shrank back from him, becoming agitated. Goblika grabbed him, pinned him with one arm, and jabbed the injector into the meat of his left buttock. Sark squealed. Goblika let him go, slid out of the cage, and sealed it again with an unword. Sark began to twitch, and then the twitching grew to a violent thrashing. He contorted and twisted, veins bulging, his limbs spasming.
"Hell's teeth," murmured Da Vinci as he watched. "It takes him longer to come back every time." "There will come a time when he won't come back at all," said Blake.
"Then we'll find a replacement," said Goblika. "We always knew that day would come."
His voice trailed off.
"What?"
asked Blake.
"The old bastard," said Goblika.
Da Vinci and Blake turned in terror, expecting to see Eisenhorn behind them.
"Idiots,"
Goblika laughed.
"Think about it. Think about it. We could turn this mess into a huge victory. Turn it right around. End the threat of Eisenhorn and replace the one failing component of this system."
"Eisenhorn?"
asked Blake.
"He's perfect. He's strong, mentally, physically. The Psychana aspect is a huge advantage. He's already attuned."
"Yeah, but his mindset," said Da Vinci. "He wouldn't cooperate. He wouldn't be willing."
"You think that animal is willing?"
asked Goblika, pointing at the man writhing and gasping in the cage.
"He was to begin with," said Blake.
"The viral shots will destroy the old bastard's resistance," said Goblika. "They'll negate his will, his self, and rewire his brain and his soul. We'll break him and reshape him. I don't think it'll be hard either. Eisenhorn's been on the edge for too long. Decades. He's been declared a damn heretic for terror's sake. It won't be a stretch for him. He's seen the warp. He knows it's a lure. We'll just tip him over the threshold so he sees the real truth. He'll realize where he should have been from the very start. He'll embrace it like a long-lost love."
Goblika grinned broadly at the two men beside him.
"And Chase and the King," he said. "They will relish the sheer poetry of their greatest adversary becoming their most valuable asset."
"Gorin?"
a weak voice called from inside the cage.
"Gorin, are you there?"
Goblika took a look at his colleagues.
"Get moving, both of you," he said. "Find Strykal. Kill anyone else you find. Anyone, caged or not. If you encounter Eisenhorn, try and drive him this way."
"If he fights?" asked Da Vinci.
"Then kill him if you have to. But only if you have to. Intact or alive enough to work with, that's preferable. Get on with it."
Da Vinci and Blake looked at each other, then turned and left the gantry. Goblika walked back to the cage.
"Sark. Magos."
Inside the cage, Draven Sark slowly stood up. He looked around, blinking at the light. His naked, emaciated body suddenly upright and straight-backed.
"Have I been asleep?"
he asked. His voice was thin and dry, but it had lost its deranged flutter.
"Yes, for a while," said Goblika.
"Can I come out, Koran? Can I come out of the cage now, please?"
"Not yet, Magos," said Goblika.
"Have I been asleep?"
"Yes," said Goblika.
"The dreams are bad," said Sark. "I don't like them."
"I know, Magos, but they will be over soon."
"You promised that last time, Gorin,"
Sark said, looking reproachfully at Goblika.
"You promised I could come out."
"The work is important, you know that," said Goblika. "But I mean it this time."
"Is it time to weave again?"
asked Sark. He put his hand to his forehead and kneaded his brow.
I don't think I'm strong enough. I feel like everything is slipping away. Everything is dark at the edges, Goran, closing in on me. When I weave, I walk out into the darkness, Goran, into dark places. It's very lonely. I don't want to go back out there any more.
You always say that, Goblika said soothingly.
Sark looked at him sharply through the bars. Anger spiked in him.
Because it's true, he cried. How many years have I spent in the dark now? Eh? It feels like centuries. These brief moments of light and wakefulness are too rare. I have sacrificed my life for the king, Goblika. My life.
Then you won't want that sacrifice to be in vain, will you?
Asked Goblika.
What do you mean by that?
Asked Sark.
I haven't roused you to weave, Magos, said Goblika. There's more weaving to be done, but not today. The hall is under threat.
Threat?
The Inquisition has found us, said Goblika.
How the hell could they have done?
Asked Sark, horrified.
Kestra is extymate. It is hidden from all, unless I invite them in. I have taken great pains.
And now you must take greater ones, said Goblika. Gregor Eisenhorn is here, in this tower. He will undo all you have done. Your life's work. You must start the loom. You must find him and speak out the means to nullify him.
Eisenhorn,
said Sark quietly.
Really here?
Yes.
I never thought he'd have the guile to get this close,
said Sark. He glanced at Goblika.
You're right, of course, Goran. He must be purged. Are there materials to hand?
Some, said Goblika. A few bodies in storage. Failed test subjects. Ones we haven't disposed of yet. Some other corpses, too. You'll find them once you start.
Go open up storage, Goran,
Sark said. He knelt down and looked at Goblika through the bars.
Do you want him dead, Goran?
He asked.
Or do you want him to suffer first?
Oh, I want him to suffer, Magos, said Goblika. But I don't want him dead. I want him helpless, deprived of his abilities.
He's too dangerous to toy with, Goran.
Think how we can use him, said Goblika.
Use him?
You want the dreams to end, don't you? Goblika asked. You want to be free of that cage. This is how.
A sad smile crossed the Magos's face.
Goran, he said, you should have led with that. This will be a pleasure.
He closed his eyes and raised his hands. Quietly at first, the words started to issue from his mouth. Half-words, unwords, formless words. He began to speak them faster and more loudly. Goblika watched for a while, until the discomfort became too great. He picked up his assault weapon, left the gantry, and walked up two flights of stairs to an upper platform. Below him, the words echoed around the tower. On the platform, there was a modular container, a metal cargo pod from a commercial shift ship. It was battered and rusty. He disengaged the lock and swung the door open. The smell of decay that wafted out was sickening. Goblika backed away, his hand clamped over his nose and mouth. Organic waste fluid trickled out over the container's sill. He left the door wide open. He waited. Then he turned his back on the container and sat down on the platform edge beside the head of the stairs. Below him, the words grew louder. A light began to glow from the gantry below. It throbbed and grew steadily brighter. The machine hum in the tower grew louder. After a while, he heard a knock and a scrape as things stirred inside the battered cargo pod. He did not look around. Nor did he look around a few minutes later, when the first dragging, shuffling footsteps moved past him towards the stairs.
So, said Drusha, not that I'm saying I'm unhappy about it or anything, but how come you're not dead?
Nail was leading them up the staircase towards the massive girder frame under the loom. He glanced back.
I got shot, Magos. I fell, he said. I survived both.
Simple as that.
Luck is never simple, replied Nail. Jaff got me in the back with a last shot. My jack armor stopped the worst of it, but the thing with jack armor is that it dissipates the force so it can't penetrate. The impact knocked me right over the rail.
"That's luck?" asked Drusha.
"I fell," said Nail. "Quite a long way. But, as you may have noticed, there's a lot of machinery in this place. I bounced off some gigantic flywheel, banged up my head and my shoulder. Then I got hooked up by the strap of my rifle, wound up just hanging there from a cog, throttled by my own gun strap."
"And that's luck?"
"Well, it broke my fall," said Nail. "If it hadn't been for the cog, I'd have gone straight down to the bottom. I waited as long as I could, waited for the cog to cycle around, then cut the strap and climbed down some gears onto a platform."
"It's very interesting what you call lucky," said Drusha.
"I'm still alive, aren't I?" asked Nail. "That's the lucky part."
Drusha was fairly sure Nail was downplaying the cost of his escape. From the way he was limping, the way he was holding himself, it was clear he was carrying some considerable injuries.
They all were. Once they'd got Vorier out of his cage, using another of Drusha's patent wax charms, they'd patched him up as best they could, using the old medical supplies in the storage bins. His smashed arm was slung and bound around his torso, the most effective temporary splinting they could muster. He was very pale and very slow, and his pain was constant. Drusha was worried about the damage to Vorier's throat, too. He and Max were taking turns to support the interrogator so he could manage the steps. Max seemed robust enough, but the brawl with Streakle had left her bruised and sore. For his part, Drusha felt like he had been run over by a tank. His hand throbbed, and his chest, back, and belly ached so much it made him wince. Max had put a dressing over the slice Streakle had cut in his cheek.
"You're a silly bastard," she told him gently while she did it.
"You need to learn some new moves, Megas," Vorier had said, smiling through his pain. "That's twice you've tried to get out of trouble by opening a cage and letting something wild out."
As they climbed, Drusha told Nail about Jaff and Eisenhorn. He related everything he could think of. "Have you seen Eisenhorn?" he asked.
"No," said Nail. "I haven't seen anybody. Not until I found you lot."
"Do we have a plan?" asked Max.
"Find a way out," said Nail. "Maybe try to use your wax charm trick on a door or something. You're all beaten up. I think Vorier needs serious attention. This is one of those times when we need to escort casualties out of the front line."
"No," said Drusha. "Eisenhorn's gone up to deal with Sark and Goblika. He'll need help. He's struggling. Something about this place hurts him." "Oh, screw him," said Max. "I told him once I'd got you out, I'd come back and help him," said Drusha. "He didn't come and help you," said Max. "No," said Drusha. "But then he never said he was going to. In fact, he said he definitely wasn't going to. I, on the other hand, said I would help him when I could." "So, what, you're a man of your word now?" asked Max. "Always have been," said Drusha.
"With respect," said Nail, stopping so he could turn and look back at them. "I admire your spirit, Megas, but I don't know what sort of help you're going to be. Your expertise is not combat-oriented."
Drusha stared at him. Nail looked away, awkwardly.
"You know what?" he said. "I'm sorry I said that. I take it back. It takes balls for a man to go into a fight when he knows how to fight. It takes a damn sight more to go in when he doesn't. Not to have a clue, but to go for it anyway. Balls of steel."
"That's what we'll call him from now on," said Max. "Balls of steel." "Head full of stupid mind," she added. Nail smiled. "This is a very big deal, isn't it, Nail?" asked Drusha, gesturing at the machine above them. "What's happening here is,
"The biggest," said Nail.
"So then," said Drusha with a shrug, "Eisenhorn was right, really. We're all expendable. In the face of this, this isn't Eisenhorn's private war. The outcome affects everything we know, everything we are, right?"
"Right," said Nail.
"So we should help Eisenhorn in any way we can," said Drusha. "I mean, we may not be any use at all, but we should try. How did you put it? To not have a clue, but to go for it anyway?"
"Something along those lines," said Nail. "I agree with the Megas," said Vorier.
"Shut up," said Max. "You can barely stand."
"Doesn't stop me agreeing, Marshal," said Vorier.
"All right," said Nail. "We go up. We take a look. If it's out of our league, we get the hell out. Find a way out of this place. Least we can do is get to Medea and get a signal sent."
"To the Ordos?" asked Max.
"Yes,"
said Nail.
"The Ordos?" asked Vorier. I think we're way past hiding now, Dara, Nail said. I think Eisenhorn would reckon so, too. We've got solid intelligence on the Cognite here. Old differences, they don't matter now. If we can't help Eisenhorn, we scream for help and bring the holy frigging Inquisition down on this place, guns blazing.
Even if that means spending the rest of your life incarcerated? Asked Drusha. Or being burned as a heretic? They still do that, right?
Even if, said Nail.
Well, I agree with that last part, said Max. Call in the Ordos, the Magistratum, the Territorial Guard, anything and everything. But for the rest of that big-talk pissing contest, I utterly despair of men sometimes.
Me too, said Nail. We're hardly packing much kill power.
Between them, Nail had his big Transvasa auto, Drusha had his Regit compact, which Max had recovered and reunited with the clip in Drusha's pocket, and Max had Streakil's las pistol.
Let's go, then, said Nail.
He turned and started climbing the gantry stairs again. Drusha took a turn supporting Vorier, and Max went ahead of them, behind Nail.
Thank you,
said Vorier quietly, as Drusha helped him up the stairs. Every step made him wince and sigh. For what?
Not telling Nail what you know, said Vorier. About me, I mean. About what Eisenhorn said about me.
Not my business, said Drusha.
You blurted it out well enough down at the cages, said Vorier.
Yeah, well, we're beyond that now, said Drusha. And there's more than enough trouble to go around as it is. They hobbled on together, Drusha's arm around Vorier's back. You should tell them, though, said Drusha.
Who?
The Ordos. Your masters, said Drusha. If you get out of here, you should go to them and tell them what you know, what you've seen, what you believe. Vorier nodded. That's not good, said Max from up ahead. She was looking at the great machine above them. High above, at the very top of the tower, a strange glow was filling the air. It expanded, growing brighter and brighter. A breeze started to rise. The humming all around them increased. With a sudden but steady motion that startled them all, the huge wheels and cogs and gears of the loom began to turn faster, until they were spinning and rattling and whizzing. The slowly cycling machine had suddenly burst into frantic, industrial life.
Yeah! Nail yelled back over the clattering roar of the spinning cogs. Not good at all!